It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
Happy pre-America Day, everyone.
Woohoo!
Happy Fourth Eve.
I blame Bush for, Trump for this. This holiday should most certainly come on a Monday or a Friday. So, I mean, he could have moved it to the 2nd or the 6th and gave us all a three-day weekend. But no, it's still on the 4th. What kind of BS is this?
He could have signed an executive order and we'd have the 4th on the 6th.
Exactly.
The 2nd. You know, the 2nd would have been fine.
I mean, well, Jesus wasn't born on the 25th, but, you know, we kind of put it there. We could move when the country is born. It doesn't really matter.
It should be like Thanksgiving. It's the last Thursday in the month, you know, or the third
like
Thursday.
Memorial Day. Memorial Day is the last Monday. Yes. Labor Day is the first Monday. 4th of July should be, I mean, we might have to change the name from 4th of July, but, you know.
Just call it Independence Day. And then it's,
exactly. Independence Day is the first Monday in July.
Look, the kids in my neighborhood have already been shooting fireworks for 4 or 5 days anyway, so it's more like Independence Week for them.
It's Independence Week for me because I took Thursday and Friday off to give me a 5-day weekend.
Nice.
Nice. Good going.
I can't use up all my vacation. I spent 2 weeks in Thailand, so I've got to save some for like later in the year when I have a day.
We just moved unlimited PTO in my job, so I'm very pleased with that.
We have been strongly told that ours is not unlimited, it is just undocumented.
So were you bought out by some British company or what? How did that work? How do you get PTO?
No, I mean that's actually become a thing more in the industry now. Really they get away from the concept of sick days and those types of things, and it's all just becomes basically the studies have shown that if you give people unlimited, they're less likely to abuse it. They won't nickel and dime it. People will use it responsibly. You still have to get your manager's sign off to be able to do it. You can't just say, I'm not going to work every Friday from now until the end of the year. You have to get approval, but you don't have to worry so much about, well, I've spent my 2 weeks, now I can't do anything else. I can't take a sick day or what have you. So it should be
nice. I gotcha. No, we have that. We have unlimited like sick days or, you know, if you're sick or you need to do something, we have that. But actual vacation days, like we get, you know, like I get 3 weeks a year vacation days, but then like for personal time off, like if you're sick or whatever, need to take care of something, you know, we can take as much of those as we want as long as we're billing as much as we're supposed to.
We make no distinction, yeah. Though. No, it's all one big
One big pot. Cool.
Yes. So, Jim, you built a pie hole. You beat us to the punch. It's been on our to-do lists individually for a long time, but you actually were the first to do it. So please tell us about your experiences with the pie hole that you built and how that's working out for you.
I could not believe that. So I set this up, and first off, it's really cool. And then I'm like, how do you guys always do all this kind of stuff first? And I'm like, oh, that sounds neat. I'll copy that, kind of like the Unify stuff where I'm like, okay, everybody else has got the Unify now. I'll get the Ubiquiti, set it up. Yeah, it works great. And so this Pi hole thing, I ordered the Raspberry Pi kit probably 3 or 4 months ago because I saw an article that was really straightforward on, you know, here's how you do it. Like walks you through step by step of the exact commands you have to run at the command line once you get your Raspberry Pi running. And I just hadn't gotten around to doing it. And so I had a little bit of time this past weekend and I was like, let's give this a shot. And I was quite frankly shocked. It was like, I don't even think it was 2 hours later. And I was like up and running and it was going. The one step I have not completed that was part of the walkthrough, and I'll put the walkthrough that I followed in the show notes, is to fully encrypt between at my house back to Cloudflare and all that. Basically, fully encrypt myself on the Pi hole. So right now, I'm not running like HTTPS on the Raspberry Pi. So I need to get a domain set up and get a certificate and get all that going. But as far as the Pi hole goes, super simple to set up. I took the default settings. I've had to whitelist maybe 4 or 5 things so far, mostly related to either Microsoft stuff. There's some stuff with Skype, like my Skype for Business not working, that I had to open up some of that. There were a couple of Apple ones that are actually blocked, like to do with iCloud, and I opened those up. I figured, you know, Apple's not evil, so I opened those up. Otherwise, I've kind of just letting it been run. I've run into a couple of sites where I get the pop-up that says I'm using an ad blocker. And, you know, there's not a whole lot I could do about it right there. If I wanted change it, I'd have to open up the Raspberry Pi admin console in a different browser window and go in and figure out what it blocked that, you know. But I don't figure it's worth that for the number of sites that I've seen. As far as the big thing for me is no of those random like pop-ups where it pops up other windows on you, like behind you or anything like that. None of those work.
What about Nagware sites that go, we noticed you're using an ad blocker. Please, whitelist. I hate those so much.
The only one I've seen, so I specifically remember an example a couple weeks ago where I got a link from somebody. I work in St. Louis a lot. And so I got a link from something from the St. Louis Dispatch and from St. Louis. And I tried to go to the site and it said, you've got an ad blocker. And then I was nice enough. Okay, I unblocked it within my ad blocking software. And then it pops up. It's like, it wants me to sign in or give it my email. And, you know, just, I'm like, come on, I already unblocked you. And now you're going to, you know, the whole page is covered in ads. And now you want me to sign in.
I was sounds just like New York Times or something.
So, you know, so I remembered that was one that I had problems with. And so when I tried that one, sure enough, that was one that still popped up the pop-up that said, hey, you're using an ad blocker. But I haven't seen that on any other sites that I've visited. And, you know, I can hit, like, just Drudge or something, and basically it's perfectly clean, or go to CNN or ESPN. None of the crazy adware stuff pops up there.
So before we lose any listeners over going too deep into your pie hole, why don't you tell the crowd exactly what a pie hole is and what you're using it for? Exactly.
I actually think one of y'all would probably be better able to explain exactly how the pie hole works than I could. I set it up. I followed these simple instructions. It's basically setting up DNS locally, requests locally that go through the pie hole. So I'm going to stop there and just let Brian or Brad explain this, because y'all know how this works actually better than I do.
It's a network-based proxy and ad blocker software. So you can get this. It's called a pie hole because typically it runs on Raspberry Pis, the cheap $50 ARM-based computers that are such great utility things for people to get and make little projects on. And as Jim points out, it does a lot of network trickery to make sure that malicious things, or ads mostly, aren't being served up to you. And you can do that at the network level.
So in setting it up, so you mentioned the word proxy. So are you actually having to set a proxy on your machine, or are you just changing your DNS, your default DNS settings?
I changed my default IP DNS.
And if you set it in the network, then anything on the network pulls that down. So I'm sorry I talked over you, but you set it. You set it in your DHCP settings in your router, and this would be best practice so that anybody that comes in your house and gets on your Wi-Fi or plugs into your wired network reaps the benefits of you running this pie hole on your network.
So my Raspberry Pi is 99.37 on my network. I go into Ubiquiti and by default set DNS 1 as 99.99.37 and don't set any other DNS on the Ubiquiti. So everything goes through there for their request. And that's, I mean, that was super simple. I was kind of shocked how simple it was to set up. I've got one password, and there's an admin site that the default setup sets up. You log in, you can see the most blocked domains. You can see just the most hit domains, which has kind of been shocking for me, how chatty these Amazon Dot devices I have. I mean, a couple thousand times a day are hitting back on Amazon. And also iCloud. iCloud.apple.com is probably, was the second most hit domain in my whole list. So I guess that's just iCloud syncing up, you know, all my different devices, probably from text messages and things like that.
Your Unify Security Gateway that you have will also, if you turn on the deep packet inspection, will show you those types of statistics too. So you can see it's very good at that. But yes, that's a...
Probably not to the granularity of the pie hole, but probably. It will show that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cool thing about the pie hole is that actually you can see like the most used domains or the ones that, you know, that were actually blocked the most and things like that. I mean, after when I set that up on Friday or Saturday last week, it's blocking 30% of requests still for me, which I just thought was crazy, the number of requests that it's blocking just through normal web traffic. I mean, I've mostly just been working this week. I haven't even been on my computer that much doing other stuff. And it says it's blocking 30% of the requests that come through. Now, given I have two dots on my network, so those are, you know, hitting a good bit. And you know, two Macs, an iPhone, an iPad, and two Apple TVs, you know, that are probably hitting stuff. So,
but think about it this way. Like, you should be able to open and say you don't buy the pro version of an app or whatever, and it's ad laden. You should not see those ads load. And when you don't see those ads load, you're saving yourself that bandwidth on your network. It's not that it's not showing up on your device. It's not showing up on your network because of the way the Pi hole works. It's not requesting, it's denying the requests to even load that content at the most basic level, which is at the DNS level. I mean, that's the first level before any other requests are made for your device to reach out and hit the website. It first makes a DNS request. And that's the thing that the Pi hole does. I mean, it's saving you probably at least 25% of your traffic. I mean,
I don't remember how much I paid requests for that thing. I mean, I bought one of the nicer kits that was on Amazon, but it was probably no more than $50 or $60. And that was everything. That was the Raspberry Pi, a little case for it. The memory card, it came with like a 32 gig memory card that you load the operating system on. That was the whole thing. And it took me no more than 2 hours to set this thing up, plug it into my router, and boom. I mean, I've been super impressed with how easy it was and how well it's worked.
I mean, for the DIY person, it's a perfect little project that somebody wants to do a little network project at home who knows just a little bit about computing. I mean, you don't have to know a whole lot. And I'm not discounting what you already know about computers, Jim, because you've been doing computers a long time and you're a smart guy. But as far as a networking person, I mean, for a networking person, it would be a walk in the park. But a person who just knows a little bit about their home network, this would be a great do-it-yourself project for someone who wants to free up bandwidth on their network and stop seeing ads on their devices, be it their laptops or their tablets and phones.
Oh, I got you. I mean, I'm a database guy. I'm a network hack at best. I mean, I stopped learning about networking in about the year 2000 when I stopped doing tech support for a certain ISP. And, you know, after that, you know, I was pretty much just a database guy from then on out. You know, I know what IPAs are. I know how routing works, basically. And it was super easy to set up.
So I got to geek out on this for just a second. So is there a version of the Pi that is powered via PoE?
There's an adapter you can purchase, and I can add it to the show notes or send you a link to it. There's a company based in Texas that makes these little adapters that basically are PoE adapters specifically for the Raspberry Pi, and they're about $7 or $8. For what you would purchase a Pi kit for, and it's going to include the little 5-watt, you know, wall wart. Instead of buying the Pi kit, buy what comes in the Pi kit minus the wall wart, and then buy the PoE adapter, and then you've saved yourself, you know, having to find another plug on your UPS. And granted, I know that you run Ubiquiti switches in your house, so PoE is, you know, already available to you. So yes, I mean, there's not a Raspberry sanctioned PoE adapter, but there are several out there on the market. But there's a good one out there that I can link to, and I'm sure the people that make them would appreciate me, you know, dropping their name in our show notes.
Yeah, because I mean, ultimately what I'm thinking is, you know, I've got the Unify Cloud Key, which is just a separate dongle that runs a, you know, version of Linux on it that manages the Unify software, and to be able to kind of make a Pi hole that just, you know, plugs into the network and doesn't have any other cords other than a 4-inch Ethernet cable would be pretty cool.
That's exactly what you need.
I just want to note this moment in the Infinite Loopback podcast history where I'm the nerdiest person here tonight. Can we just note that for just 1 second?
Well,
you did have to defer to the experts to explain what you built.
Yeah, but I built it.
We were actually building RetroPies and home VPNs and all types of crazy stuff.
Do you have like a Pi control in your garage door or something, Brian?
I did for a while until Chamberlain came out and did their thing. And I'm about to actually do that again. So I've done the Raspberry Pi projects many times. Jason and I were talking about Homebridge, and I used Homebridge about a year and a half ago to control my garage door, when Chamberlain didn't have, they had the API published, but they didn't have an actual device that would do HomeKit. And in August of last year, I was one of the first pre-orders of their device, so I was able to retire my HomeBridge, and actually that became my first RetroPie. So I am going to do it again. I just bought the Rachio, I believe is what it's called, the Rachio 3, which is a sprinkler system. And it's great. It works for Google Home. It works for with the Echo Dot, but it doesn't work with HomeKit currently because there is no irrigation spec for HomeKit. So they've strongly suggested that when that becomes available, their latest version will have it. But until then, I'm going to have to forge my own solution with HomeBridge.
So, Jim, one caveat of your system is I would stay away from the encrypted DNS because you're going to add probably a couple of seconds to your DNS lookups, which would significantly slow down your surfing and your network access. I would do some more Googling about that and not just follow the how-to that you're following to implement these things on your network. I would look more at the ramifications of it because doing DNS over SSL or TLS or HTTPS is going to add time to your DNS request, and it's not something that's just transparent. You will see the difference.
Okay. Good to know.
So today, the third beta of iOS 12 came out and the new beta of WatchOS 5. I know I put it on there. I'm willing to talk about what I've seen. Jason, why don't you lead us off, though? What have you noticed in iOS 12 beta 3 that you like?
Well, so in beta 3, there's really kind of only two main things that I've seen so far because I've only had it for a couple of hours. I had a bug in beta 2 that was kind of both a feature and a bug in that in beta 2, if you answered your phone, your list of audio output options considerably grew as far as like what you could switch to.
Yes, so, I saw this as well, where it would be like I had like four HomePods and like five Apple TVs, and like it was a ridiculous list. So is that fixed?
That
giant
is fixed.
List of speaker phones.
Yes.
Yeah. So I thought it was cool that it was included to begin with, because in the past I didn't think I had the option to actually switch the call to my watch from there on previous iOS versions. So
you did not. You could switch from the watch to the phone, but you couldn't go in reverse. So you can do that now.
You absolutely can do that now.
Nice.
And but so in beta 3, it got rid of my 14 HomePods and Apple TVs that were showing up in that list. So that's one thing. And then the other thing that I just found kind of at the start of the show was I was trying to log into Nest through my Nest app. And when I did, my wife logged into the app through her phone last night, which essentially logged me out because Nest kind of ties to a single device for like the are you home or away kind of thing. And so anyhow, I digress. So I needed to log back in because I'm in the, my office room and it's kind of hot back here and I wanted the AC on. So when I logged in, iOS 11 introduced the ability to, tap into within the app, your password list. It's in your iCloud keychain. Okay, but it was one way. You could only retrieve passwords. You couldn't update passwords. So I selected, it was like, do you want to use this account? I chose that account. I hit submit and it was like, sorry, that's the wrong password. And I remembered, oh yeah, I have updated the password. So I manually typed in the password in the Nest app. And then it later asked me, like as soon as I hit submit, do I want to update that password in my iCloud keychain?
Nice.
So now the passwords are kind of a two-way street to where if you update it in the app, it actually updates it in your keychain where you can actually use it on subsequent visits to the website if you actually went to the website.
Nice. That's good to know. I ran into a few bugs with iOS 12 beta 2. FaceTime for the longest time wasn't working for me. Like I could see other people, but they couldn't see me. My front facing and rear facing cameras were inoperable and you couldn't flip them around. You couldn't do anything. It would display a static image. Whatever the camera captured when the call was initiated was what would freeze into my video. So people couldn't see me, but I could see them. That cleared itself up on its own at some
that
point.
That sounds like a feature, not a bug.
For me, it was. It was like, I need to see other people. They don't need to see me. So, but somehow that fixed itself up. I think it may have been a server side issue. I don't know. And beta 3, I've tried that this afternoon and it was still working fine. There's a glitch in CarPlay that if you throw your vehicle into reverse and the rear cameras come on, it will disable CarPlay, which, you know, that's kind of annoying here in Georgia, where you're no longer, as of this week, allowed to touch your phone while you're driving. So that's a problem. But I don't know if that's fixed in beta 3. I literally had backed my car into the driveway, into the garage, and I came inside and updated to beta 3, and I haven't been out since. So I'm not sure if that's been fixed yet. But
so
I hope
you so. Put it in reverse, and you can't control CarPlay.
It disables CarPlay. So let's say I'm sitting there listening to podcasts. It's the equivalent of unplugging your phone. It'll say no devices connected.
Oh, wow. Wow, that is crazy. That seems...
Yeah, I first read about that on Reddit in the iOS beta subreddit, and I thought, wow, that's weird. I can't wait to see that. I hope that doesn't affect me, and sure enough, it did.
That's a weird bug, because how would CarPlay even know that you're in... I mean...
The throwing on the camera does something... When you go into reverse, that the camera coming on probably does something to the display unexpected that just caused it to kill.
Okay.
Because cool. you know CarPlay itself, well, the way that interface works on most vehicles, it's written in, it's like the QNX operating system, and most of the devices that do the CarPlay actually do Android Auto as well, and it's an emulation layer for both of those. And you know, even though the CarPlay app is built into iOS, it's really just telling that third party thing, here's what you do. I noticed Overcast was having some glitches, it seemed like, in iOS 12 beta 2, and I noticed that the SiriusXM app in beta 2 wasn't working very well. All of these things I noticed while I was driving between here and my parents' house, 300 miles away, and then back. So lots of little CarPlay.
How about Waze? I mean, get a little review of Waze on there.
You know, I signed up for the beta, but they're not accepting any beta testers right now for the CarPlay integration. So I was hoping that they would accept some and maybe, you know, end up getting the app pushed through test flight and being able to test it. But that integration hasn't been turned on. And my guess is that, you know, in reading what I've read on the internet, you know, I thought, hey, was Google taken out by surprise when they announced this at WWDC? No, they knew for a while that this was coming. So
the Mrs. and I did test drive a feature of iOS 12 last night. So she came home from work and kind of guilted me. She said, you know, hey, I was talking to the girls at work today, and we were talking about the new iOS version. I was telling them all this cool stuff about it. She was like, but you've usually upgraded my phone by now. So she guilted me into finally putting her onto iOS 12 beta 2. And I did her.
So what are you waiting on, buddy?
Well,
wow.
Anytime anything goes wrong from here on out, I'm the one that's got to say, all right, you got to force close that app and you'll get your keyboard back. And
there is no way in the world I would do that for my wife. No chance.
Same
in hell.
Here. I would never.
Yeah.
Do that.
I mean, y'all probably have to beg just to get them to upgrade to the next dot version, like the whole like version, like 10 to 11, 11 to 12. You know,
I just take their phone and do it for them. And I upgrade their iPad while they're at work.
Same here.
So, you know, they just come home and things are updated. So there's little, they don't know that things have changed. They'll complain, this isn't the same place. Like I know already inside of messages, when you go to attach a picture to a text message, that's changed completely. Used to, you could hit the camera icon and you could pick a photo. Or
now you got to hit the photos.
Yes. You have a photo button, and if you don't, you're not getting a picture attached to a text.
Yeah, it's not in the same place, but it works better now.
No, I agree, it's fine, but if you don't know that, like that's probably my wife's most used feature, and it's going to cause her no shortage of consternation of why did this change, because it took me a good few days to like remember, oh yeah, you can't do that.
I changed it just to make you mad. It had nothing to do with Apple. It was just me.
Just me to mess with you. See if you're paying attention.
So this is probably the fourth or fifth year in a row that I've actually put her on the beta with me. But I usually wait two or three or four releases until I'm satisfied that it's pretty stable. So anyhow, I upgraded her to beta 2 last night. And we did the Memoji FaceTime. And it was absolutely hysterical. So I was already ready for bed. Here I am in the bed FaceTiming, looking like, you know, Mr. Beefcake with this comic cartoon head on, and she is just cackling. So it was pretty funny. I sent y'all a picture of it through a Telegram last night.
Yes, you did. Yeah, so that is pretty.
I upgraded my iPad to beta 3 today. That was my first foray into this round of betas. I haven't decided whether I'm going to do my phone yet, but my iPad is strictly mine. I don't, you know, I work on it, but I, you know, just check email and that kind of stuff. My iPhone is also my work phone, everything I do there. So I'm a little more cautious about upgrading it, but we'll see. But I went ahead and upgraded my iPad today.
I fully expect that I would go back. Like, I didn't expect that I would, because, you know, normally how this goes, you put the beta on and it's cool for a day or two. Then you have some critical thing and you're just like, man.
It eats your battery.
Oh, it's still, and the battery life has
been. Yeah, the battery is always bad, yeah.
It's been really bad during beta too. Like, my phone would be halfway dead by the middle of the day, and that never happens because I'm never more than like 6 inches away from a plethora of chargers anywhere that I am. But, you know, I usually revert, but it's been a pretty stable experience. And now that we're on beta 3, I don't see that getting any worse. I just, you know, during the developer betas, they do turn on the battery life does get, because it's in the debug mode or whatever the information gathering mode that it's in, usually saps that battery. And this is no different, but it's been a stable beta.
What I've noticed this past week or so, it was really warm in St. Louis, and in the last couple of days in Dallas, it's been over 100. Today, I think it hit 104, 105. And anytime I'm outside, my phone is noticeably slower. It gets hot, and just clicking on things, you just click and you wait and you click and you wait. Y'all were talking about clicking to attach a picture. Like, I took a picture outside and just clicking on that icon and then sitting there waiting for the photos to come up to be able to pick a photo and then for it to pop in there. I mean, that phone, it gets hot. And also, I have a convertible. And so riding around on the weekend, I have to kind of hide my phone in the car to where it's just not getting hit directly by the sun when I'm riding around. Or when I do start to use my phone, it's one, either almost unusable because when I click on something, it doesn't really work. Or it actually just pops up a message that says, I'm too hot, you know, you can't use me at all. Or it'll say, I've had it pop up, like I'm not even taking pictures, and it'll pop up and say, your flash has been disabled because your phone is too hot.
What, do you live in hell? Do you live on the sun?
It's Texas lately. I mean, it was 105 today. So, I mean, no, when you're riding around with the top down, you know, and I had my phone kind of stuck up on the dash. And what I've started to do now is I had an old magnet adapter, and I put it up in there. And so I have my phone sitting right in front of an AC vent. And so I turn up the AC, and that kind of keeps the phone cool while I'm riding around because it's blowing directly into the back of the phone while I'm riding with the top down. So
that's probably a good idea. I've seen the your phone is too hot message before in previous iPhones because, you know, I'm fond of all black cars with black leather interiors, and it'll get hot in the Georgia heat as well. But no, that's not unusual. But heat is bad for a phone, and I wouldn't be surprised if that is, of course, what you're seeing is exactly what you would expect to see when it's too hot.
Just waiting for that battery to explode.
Well, especially when the case is on too. I mean, I've even seen blog posts where they say if you're going to charge your phone, take your case off, which that seems sort of extreme. Just because I mean, I plug my phone in a lot. You know, I mean, my phone's kind of old, so. It seems like if I was just constantly taking my case off and putting it back on, I would just leave it without a case all the time.
No, I agree with you, Brad. I in the car, I have a USB port in the head unit that I had installed in there, and so I can charge it. But here lately, I don't plug it in there while I'm riding around because between the charging and just the heat, normal heat, it I have this problem even quicker. So I haven't been charging it in the car at all. I kind of just either keep it in front of that vent or hide it like under my leg or something.
You're connecting via Bluetooth anyway, so you could probably just leave it in your pocket while you're driving anyhow, right?
Yeah. I've got a Bluetooth in the head unit I had installed, so.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts. But
so did anybody do the watch yet?
Jason, you did, right?
The watch beta?
Yeah, I've had the watch since beta 2 came out. I've liked it so far. The biggest thing I've noticed is just the grouped notifications. That's a pretty nice feature. I think I mentioned it on the last show. The other nice thing is if you dismiss like a group of notifications, like let's say you got 40 Instagram notices that people liked your stuff or replied to something that you did. If you dismiss them on the watch, it also dismisses them on the phone. So there's kind of a iCloud sync of getting rid of news articles that have been read or, you know, Facebook and Instagram notifications, that kind of stuff.
I got my new watch in, and the Nike Series 3 with cellular. And so when I set it up, I kind of just took the vanilla setup and went with it. And I hadn't turned off where it automatically starts music apps when they're playing. You know, how it automatically will start. Like if you're playing music on your phone, your watch will automatically start. Your watch will automatically switch to the music player. And I always turn that feature off. And I hadn't had it turned off yet this time, and I've actually grown to kind of like it, because in the car, it's actually easier for me to just reach over to my watch and hit next track. Or when I'm up at the pool, which I have been a lot lately because it's been so hot in Texas, you know, I'm controlling the music, and I just pull up my watch, and the music app is already open, and I just hit next or whatever on my watch, and it's already pulled up. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah, I use the pause feature on my watch constantly right now. I mean, that's for me when I'm at the gym, or, you know, rather than reach down and grab my phone and try to pause it, just tapping a button on my phone and on my watch and being able to immediately pause or play is super convenient. Like, I know when we talked about that in the past, you didn't seem to use it all that often. That just blew me away because you're always listening to music. It just seemed like that would have been like a no-brainer.
Well, now, yeah. Yeah, now I've adjusted to it and I actually like it. Yeah, because it's just right there. I haven't actually seen any benefit of the cellular watch yet. I don't know if I'm missing that. I mean, usually, I mean, you know, I tell the time with this thing, right? We kind of joke about that. But I haven't actually seen much of a benefit to having the cellular on the watch yet. So
it's not $10 a month worth it, but I have had a couple of situations where it is worth it. There are times when I'm going to run a quick errand. Let's, you know, to use an example, if I'm driving around in my car and I have my phone mounted, I know it's a very first world problem, but it's sometimes irritating to unplug the cable, pull it out of the holster, put it in my pocket. You know, one of the examples I'll use is when I'm going to, I'm taking my cat to be boarded at the vet or something. Let's use that as an example. I pull up into the vet's parking lot. I got to deal with the carrier. I got to deal with the other stuff. It's already plugged into the car. I can get out, go, you know, however far that I need to go to deal with that. And I'm still going to get my text messages. I'm still going to get phone calls. I'm going to get all of these things. My AirPods are in my pocket. So if I got a phone call and I wanted to take one, I could pop the AirPods in there. It will immediately bond with a watch. I can take the call. Those are kind of nice things. When I'm walking my dog around the neighborhood, a lot of times if I'm just going to listen to music or something silly like that, I can leave the phone in the house as a fun thing. I've tried it before. Like, I'll walk outside, I'll tell my watch, close the garage. It'll close the garage. I'm walking around, I'm listening to music. I can make phone calls, texts, basic things like that. I mean, I can keep track of the workout. Like, I wouldn't be using the phone for any more than that anyway. So why bring it if I don't have to? I mean, I am having to go out of my way to make a justification for the fact that I'm doing cellular. But there are cases like that where it works kind of nice. I go to Starbucks and I leave my phone in the console of my car, go inside to get something, and I'm going to pay with the watch. Of course, you don't really need cellular for that if you're using the Starbucks app, but I digress. But it's I'm hoping that as we go along, that dependence on the watch kind of goes away. I mean, on the phone kind of goes away, so that in situations like that, I don't absolutely have to have it with me, even when I'm at home, even when I'm doing basic stuff. Does that make sense? I mean, that to me, that's what I'm looking for.
How do you play Pokemon when you're walking your dog if you don't have your phone?
They have the Pokemon Go app on the watch, don't they?
It's just an accessory, though. It's not the full app.
Ah.
Well, also,
when I go to the grocery store, I'm sorry, Jason, I stream music from Apple Music directly to my phone into my AirPods, and we use a shared list app called AnyList, and there is an iPod version of it. I mean, I'm sorry, iPod. Apple Wow. Watch version of it. Wow. I'm really stepping back. There's an Apple Watch version of AnyList, and I can walk through the list as I'm going through the store and check off the items that I've been putting into my cart. So I can literally go to the grocery store or do a similar example like Brian and go walk the dog 100% without the watch. I mean, without the phone. 100% without the phone.
Yeah, I used AnyList this weekend, so I'll have to try that on there. I haven't tried the watch app.
I definitely got my $10 worth on the cellular side just this past Friday. So on Friday morning, I drove into work, had my iPhone 10 plugged in to the Pioneer head unit, playing Spotify, went to Chick-fil-A drive-thru for breakfast. As I was leaving, I ended up having to take a Skype for Business call, kind of impromptu, on my iPhone 6S work phone. So I get to the office, my call had ended, I'm a little bit flustered. I grab my Chick-fil-A, I grab my drink, I grab my backpack, I leave both cell phones sitting in the center console of the Navigator, get to my desk, and realize I don't have either one of my phones. Now, on that morning, I should say, I was having air conditioning problems, I was having contractor problems on a different thing for trying to sell my house. I was expecting phone calls from the realtor, and you know, I didn't have the time to be able to go back out to the parking deck and grab both of my phones, then come back and whatnot. So the few calls I was able to take were able to, you know, I was able to actually get the AC contractor into the house to start working on it. I was able to actually give the realtor the information that she needed. I was able to take a phone call from the contractor that's doing the, you know, punch list stuff on the house that I've got for sale. So just that, you know, 3 hours of me not having either one of my phones, but being able to, you know, take every incoming phone call that I had and also not missing text messages was absolutely worth $10 for the month just in that 3 hours.
We gotta all try that. Like just basically lose your phone for 4 hours. And I need to do that just so I could just learn how to use all the cool stuff my watch does. Basically just like hide my phone for myself for a day and just see what I could do with my watch.
I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, I said it on the podcast. I went and got a new battery put in my phone, and I was without my phone for about 2.5 hours. And I just decided, and since it was like a 35-minute drive back to my house, I just decided to hang around the mall. And so I'm, you know, go to Barnes & Noble and a couple other places, and I'm just jamming out to music on my watch into my AirPods.
Wow, again.
What's wrong with me today?
Did you have a stroke? What's happening? Exactly. You smell bread burning.
I'm jamming out to music in my AirPods and steadily sending texts back and forth to my wife.
Texas.
That's where Jim lives, is Texas.
I'm sending texts to my wife just using the voice part of my watch. So
why are you sending me one word responses to my text messages?
Exactly.
I do scribble a lot with the watch too. I find that I will scribble, use that scribble functionality. It's pretty good at what it picks up and what it's able to interpret. But you know, in iOS 12, you have the thing, the screen time. And screen time will, when you use it, will tell you how often you're picking up your phone, how often you're wasting time. And that's something, even independent of screen time, I've been trying to be more mindful of that. So one of the things, I'm going to go off on a rant here for a minute, but one of the things that I notice, I like to people watch, and when we go to restaurants, we go to other places, you notice the number of couples that just have their faces buried in their phones. And my wife and I came up with like a no phones policy during, particularly in you know, at home, anything goes, it's Thunderdome, but out in public, you know, we at least have the illusion of not.
At least look like we like each other.
We like each other. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, if you're going out for an experience, like if you're sitting at home, like my wife may be playing a video game on her iPad, and I may be sitting there reading a comic book or something like that. I mean, we'll sit there and talk. Don't get me
wrong. That's perfectly normal.
Yeah,
it's normal.
Yeah, it's not
but
like
yeah,
you're
when
watching
you're at
TV.
Dinner and you're both like reading Apple News or some crap.
Yeah, but when you're out in public and you're at a restaurant, and you see that. So we came up with, I think my wife sort of came up with that policy a long time ago of get off your phone before she was so addicted. She's probably more addicted than I am now. But just trying to be more sort of just paying attention to one's surroundings and not having your face buried in that device constantly. And when I'm doing things like walking the dog, when I'm doing things like sometimes I'm grocery shopping, like I could see myself when the podcast support comes to the watch, I totally see myself doing that of leaving it in the car and just listening to it on my watch. So there are certain core functionality things that I would probably still do with a watch, but we're getting to that reality pretty quickly, and it's forcing me to still pay attention to my surroundings without reaching for the electronic crack pipe and opening up Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or whatever, which, you know, I really don't need to be on any of those things anyway. So I'm looking forward to that.
Bravo, sir.
I'm trying anyway. Let's see how long I can stick with that.
No, I got it. I mean, I think I've been trying to do that myself when I go out, you know, with on a date or anything, you know, basically just put it away. I play a couple of iOS games that are huge time sucks. I mean, in addition to Pokemon, a couple other ones. And so, I mean, they're the games that you could play anytime and anywhere. And so it becomes a habit to just do it. And so, you know, I've really been trying to make an effort to just, you know, just go places, put my phone away and talk like a human being.
Exactly. So let's see, what else is going on in the world of Apple news? It looks like Apple is rebuilding the Maps app with its own data. And, you know, I thought it was sort of strange at WWDC when they announced that they would have third-party map support in CarPlay. To me, that seemed like sort of a tacit admittance that, all right, we're giving up on maps. Like, we're just throwing in the towel. We're going to let you use other things. Screw it. We suck. And I guess that was a bad way to think of it because they've allowed Spotify and CarPlay. They've allowed Amazon Music and Anchor and Overcast and Pocket Cast and whatever else that competes with its own offerings. So it seems simple. But this one was one where it sucked so bad that I thought, well, they've kind of given up on it. But it came out this week that, you know, there's an article in TechCrunch where they invited TechCrunch out to show them what they're doing. And it looks like it's going to be really neat. So they're ditching all the third-party map data. And, previously it was using TomTom, OpenStreetMap, and a few others. And, of course, we know that that wasn't really as good. But now they've had vans on the road. I've seen one of them. I saw a friend of mine in Ohio, in Cleveland, sent me a note a few months ago, like, there was an Apple Maps truck in my subdivision, in my cul-de-sac. This is really weird. And, I thought they'd been doing this for a while. But if you read the article, we'll link to it. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty neat. They're, when they're doing this, they're getting 3D maps when they scan, they sanitize the data, they encrypt them, they scrub them of personally identifiable things. And they're even taking anonymized data of part of your trips, not your entire trip, but mapping out where people drive and anonymizing it so that they can figure out where routes are without figuring out who's doing it. And there's no way for them to put it back together. So that seems pretty cool to me. And they said this was in the works even before they launched the Maps app in 2012. And at least for the last 4 years, they've been trying to ramp up this effort. So I guess they realized, too, you have to own every part of the stack. They can't just slap their name on mapping data from other companies. And they seem like they're really getting serious about this. They're going to
start. They've got the money to put behind it, too.
Yeah, you figure if anybody could do this, they should be able to do it. And it looks like they're starting on the iOS 12 beta in the Bay Area. It's going to be to all of Northern California by the fall, and then all versions of iOS. And section by section, they're going to expand it to the rest of the world over the next year. So this is pretty cool. And it looks like user-submitted corrections should appear much, much quicker, which is, again, a nice thing. But a lot of the stuff happens on device, like remembering how long something is going to take for you to get there. And, you know, it's not happening in the cloud. It's still going to be privacy-based. So I'm really looking forward to this. I think this is going to be nice, and it still probably won't hold a candle to Google Maps or Waze, but it's a step in the right direction. At least it's getting there. So what are your guys' thoughts on that?
In that thought about it, you know, not being as good as Google, you have to remember that Google Maps didn't happen overnight.
Right.
And this is a new iteration that they are trying out that will obviously not happen overnight. And I'm not saying it's going to eclipse Google Maps or Waze or a competing product, you know, in 6 months to 18 months, but you will see improvements of it. Hopefully not with just every iOS release. Hopefully we'll see updates to Apple Maps more often than that, because it seems like those are the type of things that we only see major updates to when we get an iOS release. Another thing I was reading about was you were talking about anonymizing data, is it'll also collect your walking data and whatnot when you use Apple Maps to walk somewhere. So there's places in the world that you may walk that may have a tree canopy over you that, you know, satellites can't see through that. And this will also capture that data to give you better contextual directions and whatnot when you're, say, walking through a park or, you know, other places that may have a tree canopy, or you're covered up by, say, a parking garage or something.
It's important to note, too, that Google Maps launched in February of 2005. Apple Maps launched in the fall of 2012. So it had a 7.5 year. Google Maps had a 7.5 year lead over Apple Maps. So that's important to remember. Like, Apple Maps has only existed for a fraction of the time that Google Maps did by the time Apple Maps debuted on the scene. So this is, you know, they had a good lead on them. So this is long overdue and catching up. Jim, you were going to say something.
Yeah, so two things here jump out at me. First of all, like you said, Google has this huge lead, and Google also seems more like the company that would just throw a whole bunch of bodies at a problem, like putting people in cars and riding them around to take pictures like they did for Street View. I mean, they were kind of ubiquitous for a while where, I mean, people would just say, yes, you know, I saw the Street View car. I mean, those things were everywhere. I mean, they put a lot of work into that. And I know over the last year or so, people have reported seeing like an Apple car or something like that, but it still hasn't been like Google. And Apple just doesn't strike me as the kind of company that would just throw a whole bunch of bodies at a problem, put a bunch of people in cars and drive around. It just seems like they would try to find some fancier solution to this problem. And I think that may be the issue here, is they tried for a while to come up with a fancier solution, and they realized the best solution is to put people in cars and make them drive around and, you know, figure out where all the roads are and you know, all this stuff. Second point is, I don't see nowadays how you build a Maps app without having to use some of the data that you're collecting. I mean, because you're just talking about millions of miles that people are driving using your app, which is 100,000% the best single data that you can collect to build a Maps app, is where people are were driving and going and doing things. I mean, it's just it's the best way for your application to learn, is to learn what, you know, for people are doing, even if they're not using directions. If they just have the map app open, you know, where they're going, what streets they turn on, all those kind of things. I mean, supposedly Waze learns from you, where if you take the same specific route a lot of times, then it would generally suggest that route to you over other ones. You know, and so I think that's got to hinder Apple a little bit when they try to stay privacy centric, and they want to, you know, they want to use it, but they don't want to use it. It's like they're kind of stuck between we want to use it, but we're going to use it in the cleanest way we can, not to have your data tied up with it. Because to me, that's just that goes without saying that if you have a Maps app, the best way for it to learn is for people to use your Maps app.
With over a billion iOS devices out there in circulation, they would agree with that, I think. And since they're pulling part of a trip out of your history, they're only pulling segments. I mean, I think that would probably end up being good enough. If I drove, you know, 700 miles round trip this weekend, they wouldn't need all of that data. But taking randomized samples of where I was and comparing that to where other people were, you could build a pretty accurate map of the U.S. without having complete trips that's completely anonymized. Like, I really encourage everyone to read this article thoroughly, because they really talk about how they believe, they totally 100% believe that they can do this and also preserve user privacy. And I'm inclined to believe them just by virtue of the fact, like you say, there's so many devices out there. I mean, this is the same approach that Google takes, but they're not as mindful of privacy where Apple totally is. I really think that is their secret sauce too. And I expect things are going to turn around for them. They've been behind for a while, but they're throwing a lot of bodies at getting things better and still maintaining that privacy. And I really respect that.
Throw a lot of bodies at it, as in a billion users.
Yep.
And they've got more cash than anybody does.
Yes.
I mean, literally more cash than anybody does. Spend a little bit of that money, you know? Come on. Where's my flying car?
Where's my self-driving car?
Side tangent regarding cash. I read an article earlier this week that Bezos just went over $145 billion.
And it's all due to the data that he's collecting off Jim with his chatty echoes that are always talking back.
The three comma club.
Ah, tres commas. Not dos commas, tres commas.
Good one, Brad.
I love that. That character on Silicon Valley is the best. That is by far the most entertaining dude bro out there. Let's see. A couple more things to get to before we call it a show. Apple is reportedly working on noise-canceling AirPods for 2019 release. Yes, please. I would love to have such a thing, but I can't imagine how they would end up looking, since when you have AirPods, when you have any sort of device where it's noise-canceling, it ends up having to be a lot more encompassing of your ear canal. So, I mean, they do make those types of earbuds that do it, but they're not AirPod-shaped, typically. So
now, I don't know what they're going to do here, unless they just make Bose/Sony type over air headphones and call them AirPods. That's the only thing I can think. I don't know how. I mean, like you said, that Bose has an in ear noise canceling headphone that they sell. So I guess Apple could do something similar.
AirPods. If you're going to do active noise canceling, you've got to have a bigger battery on them. I mean, that's part of why a lot of noise canceling headphones are over the ear. It's because they have batteries in them. I mean, large batteries in them. I mean,
good point, Brad.
You're not going to pull that off with something the size of an AirPod and have it be constantly transmitting sound into your ear like that.
I really want.
Maybe they'll put micro solar panels on the tips and recharge them that way.
It'll be interesting to see if they can pull this off. But just a reminder, the inductive charging case that they announced nearly a year ago for the AirPods still isn't out. So,
yeah, I'll try this one more time. I really want a new pair of AirPods. I can talk on a conference call for like 30 minutes to an hour now and mine are almost dead. I can listen to music for a while, but if I do conference calls with them, which here lately, my life has been conference calls, like on and off all day long, just constantly. I have to specifically, like as soon as I get off a call, remember to plug them in and plug in the case and try to juice them up as fast as I can to get ready for the next call. Because I mean, I've owned them over a year now. I mean, they've been great. They've been amazing, and I would like to buy another pair, but I keep saying I'm not going to buy another pair because I keep thinking the next thing is coming. Like it's not going to be this noise canceling version, but there might be, you know, some with slightly better sound, or I might be able to get a black case or a red case or just something that's different. And as soon as I buy these things, come September, they're going to announce something's different, and I'm going to be mad because I just paid $160 plus tax, you know, and then knowing me, I've got to buy the new ones too.
Didn't Apple just refresh the AirPods in the past 2 months? That didn't happen.
Nope. It still kills me that my old wired earbuds are what I have to use for most of my conference calls because I'm on the phone so long. And by so long, that can be 75 minutes or 80 minutes and still, and I'm in the same boat. I do have two pairs of AirPods. The good news is that they both, you know, one I don't use very often, the other one I use all the time, and they both have the same amount of battery life. But the bad news is the battery life isn't that good on whether it's pristine or whether it's old. So about an hour, if you're lucky, is what you're going to get out of the AirPods if they're in phone mode. Whereas, you know, like I could listen to music for 2.5-3 hours, something like that, and not have a problem at all. It's really strange to me. But yeah, they're going to have to get better. I've even contemplated, like, what is the battery life on the Beats X? Like those, you know, the earbuds.
The wraparound ones? Yeah.
Yeah, like I've even considered
that. They've
got
the string that's tied between the two. Yeah, I've looked at those too. So, I don't know. I've started doing a lot of interviews for the company I work for, like second technical interviews. And I don't even try to use my AirPods anymore. I just plug in my, I just plug in the white earbuds that came with the phone. And that's what I use just because I've had trouble, like, where if I get on the phone and one starts cutting out or something, I don't want to be on an interview with somebody and be like, my headphones stopped working. Sorry, can you give me a minute? You know, so I don't even start them with the AirPods anymore. Like, if I'm on a conference call with people I work with, I'm just like, hey, screw y'all. Wait a minute. Something's not working. But, you know, if it's somebody we're trying to hire, you know, I got to seem professional, which is already hard for me. So I use those headphones to help me out a little bit.
You know, what's weird is that in my own non-work related stuff, I'll walk around the house and have them in all the time. Like just knocking around the house while my wife's at work because I can, you know, I can, my dog has a thing where if I play videos on my phone, she can do it and it doesn't bother the dog. If I watch anything with a video, like if Jim sends a Snapchat or I hit Instagram and I'm watching a story or something, if I start playing audio, my dog heads for the hills. Like she hates it coming from my phone. My wife, she does it, doesn't bother her at all for some reason. So sometimes I'll just leave my AirPods in for,
it's because you're the alpha.
That must be it. So I'll just, I'll leave them in and, you know, sometimes my wife gets off work, she'll call me on the way home. So I'll already have them in. I'll be lounging, playing a video game or something. And that way I just reach up and double tap my ear and answer the call. They'll last for hours in standby mode. But if I try to sit there and make a work call, it's no bueno. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
And now when she comes home, you're going to be playing an NES classic.
Indeed. I got that. I posted it on Instagram. It arrived today. When does yours get there, Jim?
Mine got here today as well.
Nice. So,
mine'll be here Saturday.
So mine is, I was like, oh, I know what I'm going to be doing tomorrow when it's 106 degrees out. I'm going to be inside playing Super Tecmo Bowl.
Just like it was 1988 all over again. No, that's awesome. I noticed that there for a day or two, they were in stock. They were even in stock at the local Best Buy, and you could get them. I checked them yesterday. They're completely sold out online and in stores. So whatever limited production run they made of them, they sold out. They lasted a little bit longer, but I didn't want to give Nintendo my money because I was so irritated the last time this thing came out. They only made a handful of them, but they got my $60 this time.
Did all four of us buy one? Jason, did you get one too?
Yep, it was on the front porch this afternoon.
Nice.
All four of us got one. That's hilarious.
What about you, Brad? You got one as well, right?
Yeah, mine will be here, I think, Saturday. But I'm pretty excited about it. You know, you could go the whole RetroPie route and download ROMs, et cetera, you know, through some Ware site or whatever. Or you could just go the legit route and pay your $60, pay your tax, and just plug it into the TV. You're ready to go. There's no DIY to it whatsoever.
Well, there's 30 games available to for the Classic, and there's like 2,100 on my RetroPie. So there is a little difference.
Yeah. There is that.
But still, I mean, come on. All four of us are just like, please, Nintendo, take my money. Here's my $60. You could have had it a year and a half ago. You can finally have it now. I mean, that's just crazy that, I mean, I know we're all, you know, huge nerds or whatever, but still, I mean, to think about how many of these things they sold and how many more they probably could be selling if they would just make more. It boggles my mind that they just don't produce these things until they're sitting on shelves like ET cartridges.
You have a good point, but also the demand that's created when they sell out so quickly, you know, in the 48 hours that they were probably available online before they sold out again. And then there's that other batch of people like Brian and myself from a year and a half ago where you say, man, if I could have just gotten one. And those are going to be the same people in another year and a half or whatever that say, I'm going to be there when they see that link go up on whatever website they buy one, you know, and that they, I mean, Nintendo's creating demand. They really are.
The first batch that they produced went on sale at 2 p.m. on a Friday or something. I was at work. Like I was on a call with a customer. I didn't have time for that. And this time when they released it, it was like just before 9 a.m. or 2 a.m. or something. It was at a much
early
more
morning,
reasonable
yeah.
hour. Yeah, so that's why I saw it. I saw that link. I jumped on it, sent it to you guys, and I fully didn't expect it would arrive. I was like, this has to be a goof. This isn't going to work.
Same here. I checked in on the shipping.
Brian's
I'm like,
in the
it's
middle
probably
of
just
a,
shitting on
voice
order
call,
created.
And he's like, stand by, please.
I lost a connection. Hang on. You know, I'm over there hitting submit 5 times.
Yeah, so I bought the Super NES version just before Christmas, but I gave it Me to too. My brother for his birthday. Or, sorry, for Christmas, I gave it to my brother just because he was more of the Super NES player than I was. And I thought it would be a good Christmas present. But the NES one is all mine.
My Super NES was lonely, so it needed a friend, which is why I went and did that. But the Super NES was a little bit easier to find. I think I bought that at a GameStop or something, like right around Thanksgiving or something, around Black Friday. I just waltzed in, bought that, extra controllers. But the NES, I guess the NES was a lot more popular than the Super NES.
I don't think the Super disappeared off the shelves as quickly as the original.
I think the NES carries a lot more nostalgia factor for the people that were really out there getting them.
It has Tecmo Bowl. That's really all it needs for me. I don't care about all 30 games. It needs one game, Tecmo Bowl. That is it. That is the only one I care about.
Is it Tecmo Bowl or Super Tecmo Bowl where Bo Jackson is the beast?
Super Tecmo Bowl.
Like, he was unstoppable, right?
I'm not expecting real names in whatever version that's on here. I know they probably don't have licenses anymore for that. I mean, they didn't have licenses originally for a lot of that stuff.
They just called them by the city's name. They didn't say
But even the players now, I'm not expecting, you know, real names on there or whatever. But it'll be fine. You know, a couple of vodka and grapefruits, and I'll know it's Bo Jackson.
All right, so for our last thing today, this just came out this afternoon. It looks like some Samsung phones are spontaneously texting photos to random contacts without their permissions.
Oh, man, I thought she liked me.
Well, I guess it's not an exploding battery. So, I mean, you know, from a PR perspective, this isn't quite as bad. But I think I'd rather my phone blow up than send pictures out without my express written consent.
Yeah, you just got to be careful what pictures you keep on your phone. You got to keep those other ones just tucked away in the Dropbox.
I did read where I think the S9 is going to make its debut in August, a month before the whatever the next iPhone versions are called.
It's always funny how they seem to chase Apple, even though I know in terms of sheer number of phones, they sell probably more than Apple does. But the whole perception is that by doing stuff like that, of like, we got to get it out before that comes out. You're just saying, I know if I don't do this, then I won't be able to sell as many because people will buy the new iPhone. It just seems like a tacit admittance that this product may not be as well sought after as the competition.
What I always thought was weird about all that is, I don't know if it's the case anymore, but in years past, Samsung was always one of the biggest component makers for the iPhone.
Still
like
is.
They would either make in the screen or the processor or, you know, all this different kind of parts. And so how do they like put this huge like brick wall between this one part of Samsung that knows everything Apple's doing because they're getting the specs to build all this stuff versus the Samsung side where they're building their phones? I mean, it's like they have to know everything Apple's coming out with way before it ever comes out because they're the one that's building the components.
Well, not always, right? So from a display perspective, absolutely, right? They absolutely will build those. And there's a report this year, we didn't link to it, but they're trying to get more of their OLED components from LG so that they don't have to depend quite as much on Samsung. If Apple wanted to cripple Samsung, all they would have to do is just not buy any components. Of course, they couldn't build iPhones, so it would be like it would be a mutually assured destruction. Yeah. But that would really hurt Samsung a lot if they didn't have to depend on them. So you know, last year I know when the iPhone 10 went with the OLED, our Android friend who we like to malign quite a bit was like, "Hey, they're building Samsung displays." And it's like, yeah, but they're building it to the specifications that Apple specified, which are not the same as what Samsung is using in theirs. Yeah, whatever. But no, it's actually a good distinction, right? So even though they know
some...
We need
a name for him. We just need to start calling him like Jeff or something. You know, Jeff.
He's the most popular guy on this podcast, and he's not even on it, and he doesn't even know, and he never would know. Come on, Jason, say it. I know you want to.
Nah, I'm going to give him a hall pass.
He's a good guy. He really is. It's just, you know, he gets a religious fervor about his Android stuff, which is always funny to me because I don't care as much as he does. But no, they do know some of it, but some of the a lot of the components come from different companies, and it's not all entirely Samsung, but it definitely is, at least from the display perspective.
I wonder if his head exploded this week because of LeBron James signing with the Lakers.
Oh, that's a good question. He owes me lunch, actually. So we've been talking. We were supposed to get it last Friday, but we had a company meeting that prevented us from getting lunch. He lost a bet with me, so I'm gonna make him make good on that. So I'll have to.
I'm
ask
just gonna
him.
Say that we do love all of our Android friends. We just can't be best friends, and we won't date you. So I mean, if you want to date, I mean, I guess I'm the only single one here, but I won't date somebody with green text. They got to have blue text if I'm gonna date them. So. Look at Brian waving around an Android in his house.
Even. I'm holding up an Android tablet, an NVIDIA Shield tablet, sitting on my desk that I use every now and again as a Waze device or have in the past, just as a play device. I have
Benedict Arnold.
I have in my hand.
The Android
right
in my house is my Sony TV. Is
not one Android, but two Android phones right in my hand right now, sitting right next to my iMac.
You haven't sent those back yet?
No, one of them I did. The other one I'll end up selling on eBay. The other one was given to me by a friend, same friend in Cleveland that I was talking about who saw the Apple Map truck, which is a really old Android. So, again, you won't find any iPhones that aren't corporate issued to our Android buddy. But I have plenty of those devices. And if you count the Amazon tablets as Android tablets, I have two of those upstairs. So I consider myself a technologist. I consider myself I was just reading an article on those $400 Microsoft Surface tablets, and one of them will have LTE built in. And I was looking at that; it's supposed to be a 10-inch tablet. I'm like, I could see myself buying that. Like, I dabble. I do dabble. I get this. I have this reputation amongst a lot of people I know. Oh, he's the Apple zealot, and it's like I'm not really. I mean, yeah, I'll buy a lot of the stuff that they have, but I buy a lot of stuff that other
you
people
buy a
make
lot of
too.
All the stuff.
I buy all of the things.
You're like all your stuff are belong to Brian.
Pretty much. So I like. I mean, again, how can
show
we
title?
Be, how can we be? Doing what we do if we don't know what the other manufacturers are building, what the other experiences are like. I want to play with these things and see what they're like. And you know what? I used that Motorola G6 for a good several days before I returned it. And it wasn't a bad phone for $200. So
I'm not going to fail. I'm kind of hoping that when Prime Day comes up, and I guess next week, I'm hoping they put like the Fire HD 10 on like a blowout sale, because now you can use those as like Echo Show type devices and enable Alexa mode on it. So I might try one out if they drop the bottom out of the price on them.
Yeah, I still want that Alexa alarm clock thing.
Well, you know, they're on an all-time
the
low
Echo
right
spot.
Now. The Echo.
Oh, yeah, they're on sale right now for $129, down from $229.
No, that's the Echo Show, though. He's talking about the alarm clock, which I can't for the life of me imagine why he would want an alarm clock.
It's so cute.
I bought a Show. I got it for the regular $229. I got one for $149. So now I'll be able to compare the features of Alexa on both my Fire HD 8 and my Echo Show.
The Show I can kind of understand, but the alarm clock I completely cannot. Whenever I go to a hotel, the two things that I ditch first are the phone in the room. I put it underneath the nightstand, and I take the alarm clock off and sit it underneath and then proceed to build an Apple store on the nightstand of my hotel room. So
I do that too.
I do it just to free up one more plug on the nightstand.
Exactly. Yeah, I would never use an alarm clock, a standalone alarm clock ever again. Like past 2009, I've never had need for one like ever. That's what the fact that Amazon would even sell one just blows me away. Like who would use this? Jim wouldn't use
it. It looks neat. I bought a refurb Kindle Voyage a couple weeks ago. I've really enjoyed it so far. That's their top end Paperwhite. So that's been nice. You know, it's not color. It doesn't do any fancy tricks. It's basically just for books.
But what's great about those the regular Kindles, you know, the still the e-ink ones is they're super light. I mean, they're just great. Whereas my Fire HD8 still has a little bit of heft to it. You know, it's got that display and a bigger battery in it to support that display. I would love to go back to an older style e-ink just for reading books.
I like it because exactly that reason. I can bring it to the pool and sit beside the pool and I can actually see the screen with no problems at all. Whereas my iPad, it bleeds straight through in the sunlight. The pool is on the 18th floor of my building, so it's just you're in the sun, and so
you're that much Voyage, closer to the sun.
Yeah, I mean, I had a Paperwhite and I dropped it or something, and it's got like this huge black dot right in the middle of the screen, which doesn't diminish the use of the device, but my OCD will not let me read on that thing with this black dot in the middle. I just can't take my focus off that black dot. So they put the Voyages on.
I'm right
on
there with you.
On a refurb, like a refurb deal a couple weeks ago.
So
like
you couldn't be one of these folks that walk around with a cracked screen on their iPhone permanently?
God, I would go without a phone if I had to walk around with a cracked screen.
I couldn't stand it. It bugs me so much when I see that. Well, we had a couple other things on the list, but we're running a bit long, and it is the our 4th of July midweek sort of break. So I think this is probably a good place to stop. Everything else we can wait. I didn't even think we'd fill the hour, and here we are well over right now. So anything you guys want to add before we go?
I was just thinking, whoever's editing this, it's probably going to take them a while. Man, that's got to suck.
Gee, you think?
Thank you, Brian.
Well, I do want to get this out fairly quickly so that our devoted listeners can have something to listen to. So this will probably be a quick turnaround. As soon as we're done recording, it's about 9 p.m. on the 3rd. I'm going to try and get this out by the morning of the 4th and still go see probably The Incredibles 2 in about an hour.
Awesome.
Nice. Nothing else from Texas.
What about from the northern suburbs of Georgia, of Atlanta?
Looking forward to watching your dog for the weekend. That's going to be pretty fun. My chocolate lab's probably going to wear Abby out, but you'll get her back worn out and ready to sleep for a couple of days.
I really appreciate that. That's helping me out of a tight spot as I make a quick run to Nashville for the weekend for more family visits. I've been out of town every single weekend since about Mother's Day, I guess. I've been out of town just about. There was one weekend, I guess the 29th, or no, the 22nd, when I was in town. It's going to continue for the foreseeable future. And this is very much unlike me because I don't normally do this. But it is what it is.
Speaking of Nashville, did you read that Hattie B's is ready to open at Little Five Points in Atlanta?
Ooh, I did not.
What's that?
That is one of the original Nashville hot chicken places. This is going to be their first out of Tennessee location, as I understand it.
Nice. And that's, of course, for our listeners that aren't familiar with Georgia. That's sort of like the artsy area of downtown Atlanta. Previously, my biggest reason for going there was the Vortex, which, just like the Midtown location, has horrible, horrible parking.
Been there.
That's right. Actually, when Jim came to, well, you went to the Midtown location years ago when you came out here with me. That's a nice one as well. Little Five Points there's a much harder time. The parking spots are even harder to come by over there. I thought they were bad in Midtown, but at least you have the for pay parking over there. It's really tough. We were over there a few weeks ago, you know, just like, hey, we haven't been to the Vortex in a while. So why don't we do this? And we were near Little Five Points for whatever reason. I think we went to Ponce City Market. And we were trying to get the Casper and we just ended up having to abandon that idea because there was no place to park. It was Saturday night at 6:30 or something. It was stupid of us to even try. And we ended up going to a place called Bad Daddy's Burgers that was wasn't quite the Vortex, but it was very good. And I would eat there again over in Chamblee, so that was nice.
I take back my I don't have anything else left from Texas. Really quick, we've got electric scooters in downtown Dallas, and they are so much fun. I love them. I've ridden a Bird for a couple of days now. I love it. The Lime scooters showed up today. I haven't ridden one of those yet. Next time we do the podcast, I'll do a full report on the electric scooters because they are awesome.
So your homework for the next time, Jim, is to get some sort of chest cam apparatus for your iPhone or something similar. We want to see live footage either on Instagram or Snapchat or somewhere from you riding around the scooter. That would be, I think I speak for everyone when I say
done.
I want to see that.
I have t-shirts that have pockets and I can just stick my phone in it and turn on the video and go.
Nice. A reverse selfie stick of sorts, a gimbal that he's attached to, a steady cam. Actually, I would probably do that if I had access to those scooters just for the
more
for
like
the
a
fun.
Shaky cam, but okay.
You know, you got the stabilization in the iPhone. It's a good way to see how well it works.
Oh, true.
Yeah, they're a blast. So yeah, we'll talk about that next time.
Excellent. Anything from you, Brad, before we go?
Just going to get ready to do some barbecuing. I'll probably be up late tonight watching the smoker. That's just how smoking works.
I intended to go and get some quality cuts of meat, but I didn't do it. I had other stuff going on. I was busy at work, and time got away from me. And next thing you know, it's the end of the day, so it'll be fine. Oh, before we go, one last thing. The Whole Foods discounts through Amazon Prime. If any of you guys, I know this would probably talk for another 10 minutes on that, but have any of you guys tried that yet? Have you been tempted to go and use your Prime discounts for any of the things at Whole Foods? They've been spamming the crap out of me, so.
I haven't yet, but we probably will.
I'm almost out of grapefruit juice, and Whole Foods grapefruit juice, like that fresh stuff that they make there, is probably the best thing on the planet Earth, so I need to go get some of that.
How do you drink grapefruit juice? Ugh. Oh,
man, grapefruit juice is great.
Oh, and when you mix it with vodka, oh, wow.
I would have to mix it with liquor to make it even tolerable before I would have to be blitzed out of my mind before I could even stand it. Oh, that stuff is so bitter. Oh.
I made a huge growler full before I went to the pool earlier, and it's about half gone now.
If you put a tumbler of prune juice and a tumbler full of grape juice in front of me, I would have a hard time picking out which one I hated less.
Blasphemy.
Ugh,
the Whole Food stuff. It's like you're drinking the bottom of the bowl after you just ate grapefruit. It's just like that fresh. It is so amazing.
Anyway, all right. Well, that's the show, and we'll talk to you guys later. Have a good week, and later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit InfiniteLoopBack.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at InfinLoopBack. That's at I-N-F-I-N LoopBack. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.